I'll put my first question to Mr. Millett in London. Mr. Millett, Syria has presented a proposal welcomed by Russia under which it will conduct elections within 3 months and Assad would take part. The opposition can pit its own candidate. What do you think about this proposal and how viable it is?
Well, it's not wise at all. It would be sham elections. We've seen that in other parts of, for instance, if you look at Egypt as an example, elections are sham. Elections aren't accepted by the country because there are deep sectarian divisions within that country, and those are even more extreme in Syria. So the elections would be a farce, certainly with Assad taking part. And yes, as you say, on the other side, who would stand as a representative of the opposition? The opposition is divided. The main problem is actually achieving a ceasefire before you could even have elections, because mm-hmm. with Al-Qaeda fighting against the rebel groups, it seems likely that even as this conference takes place in Switzerland, the fighting is going to continue.
Right, let's go to Mr. Dreitzer on this as well. Now, Mr. Dreitzer, I guess in London was saying that an election involving President Assad would be a sham, but there are those who are arguing against this and saying we should allow the Syrian people to decide whether they want Assad to stay or whether they want him to go. What do you think about the Syrian proposal?
Well, I think that the Syrian proposal is certainly interesting, but I think we should note that the issue is not about whether or not they have elections in 2 months or 3 months or 4 months. The issue is about what is the ultimate objective of the opposition. It seems that the opposition is unwilling to engage in any democratic process of any kind because they understand that they stand no chance against Assad in terms of a popular vote. Whether you look at Western media sources or non-Western media sources, the polls show that there is no single individual who could come even close to maintaining the popular support that Assad does. Certainly there are sectarian issues, and certainly there are issues related to security on the ground, but the notion of elections is something that the United States and its proxies in the region are terrified of, precisely because they understand that it will not be under their control. And this is exactly why the opposition is being so obstinate when it comes to the Geneva II agreement, because it is the Geneva communique, that is to say, the precondition that Assad must leave, that he cannot be part of a future political settlement, that precondition is what they are resting their hats on, because they understand that without that, they are essentially dead in the water.
Mm. Well, Mr. Millett, you referred there to the need for a ceasefire before any political process can move forward. And the issue of a ceasefire means fighting the problem of terrorism in Syria. Bashar al-Assad said in his interview in the news today that the Geneva conference should focus on the war against terror. How can terrorism in Syria be tackled?
Well, of course he would say that, wouldn't he? Because he wants to divert attention away from the civil war that's taking place in Syria, and he wants to obviously retain his position in power at the head of a country. Look, this was a guy who, at the beginning, 2 or 3 years ago, when the uprising started against him, he wasn't interested in elections then. He was only interested in gassing his own people. We've even seen in the Yarmouk Palestinian refugee camp in the suburb of Syria, 15 Palestinians have been starved to death by Assad. Assad should not be allowed to carry on, and the reason he can carry on is because he's supported by Iran, who are supporting Hezbollah, another terrorist group on the Syrian side, who are fighting. This has become a war between Hezbollah mm-hmm. and Al-Qaeda, where there is no chance of peace while these two terror organizations go head to head, and the people who are suffering are the innocent people of Syria. This is going to be a very, very complicated conference, and the only people who are going to make any money out of it are probably, or any going to gain any advantage out of it, yeah. are probably the hotels in Switzerland.
Well, I'd just like to mention the issue that you said about gassing the people in Syria, the chemical weapons issue. We know that it's still not being proven who was behind that attack, although the Syrian government insists it was the work of insurgents. And recently an MIT report saying that the evidence shows that the Syrian government forces couldn't have been behind it. Again, that's an issue that needs to be proved. And you referred to Hezbollah there as a terrorist organization, which is also something that's not agreed upon by many in the international community. But before I continue the debate with you, let's go back to Mr. Dreitzer. Mr. Dreitzer, who do you hold responsible for the issue of extremism and terrorism in Syria, and how can we put a stop to it?
Well, let me just say, first of all, that the idea that Assad gassed his own people is a complete misnomer, or rather, it's an outright lie. The MIT study, as well as countless other examinations of the evidence, showed that it was the rebels. It was not that the incident in Ghouta was not carried out by the Assad forces. So this is merely a propaganda talking point for the purposes of muddying the discussion. Now, when it comes to the issue of who's really responsible for the terrorism in Syria, we can look to the foreign elements which have infiltrated the country, and those foreign backers who have provided them the financing and the funneling of the weapons. Most specifically, we should look at Saudi Arabia and Qatar, who have been providing the financing to the terrorist organizations such as the Al-Nusra Front and the various other Al-Qaeda affiliated organizations. We should also look at the Washington Post and New York Times exposés from 2012, which documented the CIA working with the Syrian Muslim Brotherhood on the border between Syria and Turkey to funnel in the weapons along those border regions and to distribute them throughout the country. We have a tremendous amount of documented evidence showing who is responsible for the terrorist infiltration of that country. But at the very least, we should recognize that what President Assad said regarding the Geneva conference, that it should be focused on combating terrorism rather than trying to figure out a way to get a regime change hammered through. This is the key point, because there is a terror war happening on the ground in Syria, and it absolutely is a proxy war. We should recognize it as such. We need to think of the international interests which have a stake in Syria, those of course being Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Israel and the United States, and as well of course Iran and the various other players such as Russia. All of these countries have an interest in what's happening in Syria, so all of them would want to see some kind of a solution. But as long as the terrorist elements and the jihadi factions are funneled into that country, it is impossible.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, Mr. Millett, when we're talking about how we can bring a ceasefire to Syria, how we can stop the spreading of terrorism, a lot of people are now agreeing on this issue of we have to ask the US and its allies in the region, the likes of Saudi Arabia, Qatar, etc., to stop this funneling of support, weapons, etc., to these militants and to the terrorist groups. Do you think that is really vital in order to have a ceasefire, in order to stop terrorism?
Well, obviously, yes. You've got to stop the weapons going to both sides. Russia continues to supply Assad. I don't understand your analyst in America who's being not very objective. I mean, this is a problem on both sides. This is not a one-sided conflict. Your analyst in America is painting the Assad regime as being angelic. They are supplied by Iran, they're supplied by Russia. Even yesterday, they were bombing suburbs or in Aleppo, dropping barrel bombs out of aeroplanes. They have continued the violence, or they will continue the violence, right up until the doors of Geneva. And this is a sectarian, it's a complex situation. You just cannot blame one side. But to answer your question, to stop weapons being supplied would be a start, but and maybe a no-fly zone would also be a way to go. But the United Nations is unlikely to agree to a no-fly zone. But once that's in place, then we can get humanitarian aid into feed and give medical supplies to the Syrian people.
Mr. Dreitzer, what's your response to that?
Well, first of all, again, the analyst there in London is completely misrepresenting the facts. The foreign terrorists are not an internationally recognized government. They do not have the rights afforded to a nation state. The Assad government is internationally recognized. They are the legal entity governing the nation of Syria. So weapons contracts that were signed with Russia or with Iran or with anybody are legal. They are not illegal. They are not being funneled into the country in some kind of a nefarious way. That is what is happening for the opposition, for the terrorist elements. So you cannot equate the two. Nobody is painting this this issue as entirely one-sided. There are many nuances to it. But the Assad government is a legally recognized government that is under assault from foreign interests. It is not the same thing. More to the point, the notion of a no-fly zone is a completely laughable idea. No-fly zones, and just as sanctions are a prelude to war, name me one historical example of any time that the Western powers implemented a no-fly zone that did not lead directly to a war. If we are so foolish as to forget merely a couple of years ago what happened in Libya, the United States gets a UN Security Council resolution for a no-fly zone in Libya, which it takes to be an authorization for war, which is exactly what it became within a matter of hours. The idea that somehow a no-fly zone is for humanitarian purposes, this is absolutely outright lies. Yes. From imperialist powers and their apologists.
Okay, we are quickly running out of time. Mr. Middleton, if you could quickly respond to this one. We know there's a lot of divisions among various opposition groups, even about taking part in this peace conference. But do you think these divisions are, you know, working against a resolution of the conflict? And also, how representative do you think these groups can be of the Syrian people?
Well, the problem is obviously the sectarian divide between one side you have Shia government and the Sunni opposition groups that are divided. And yes, they're not representative of the Syrian people, just like Assad is not representative of the Syrian people. He's never been voted into power. He's now not recognized as the proper ruler of Syria, and he won't step down. So therefore, this problem is going to be prolonged. So yes. The only way to recognize if there are proper democratic elections, if the international community can fix proper democratic elections, then it would be representative of the Syrian people.
Yes.
At the moment, there are no representatives of the Syrian people who are fighting in Syria.
Well, Mr. Drates, I'd like to have your comment on that as well, quickly, if you can. How representative do you think these groups can be of the people? We know those who even decided to take part in the Geneva Conference are said to be taking part because they're under U.S. pressure.
The idea that the Syrian National Council or Coalition or any of these other groups can be representative of the Syrian people is completely laughable as well, because these are handpicked by the Western powers. They are not chosen by the Syrian people or by anybody who has their interests at heart. Their purpose is to serve as a proxy element for the United States and its proxies in the region. This is a puppet institution set up for the purposes of regime change, whether they achieve it through political and diplomatic means or whether they achieve it through military means. The idea that the Syrian people have no representative, that means that you reject the notion of nation states. The Assad yes. government is the government of Syria, and until such time as the Assad government is removed politically, and yes. it, rather than an imperial force taking him out, that is an impossibility.
Thank you very much, Mr. Eric Drates in New York, founder of StopImperialism.com. We've run out of time. I'd like to thank our guest in London as well, journalist and political commentator, Mr. Richard Millett. Thank you so much, everyone, for staying with us here on another edition of The Debate. I'm Homa Lizgi. It's goodbye for now.